The oil market is already discounting a report that some of the world's major oil producers are close to working out a freeze in production. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. After 20 months of collapsing oil prices, what Russia's oil minister calls a critical mass of oil producers are indicating that they would go along with a production freeze. This includes Russia, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, and others. Note this is a freeze, not a production cut, and crude oil traded in New York this morning was about $34 a barrel. It was $112 a barrel 2 summers ago. Tom Klosa is global head of energy analysis for the Oil Price Information Service.
Russia is not exactly Jimmy Carter in terms of international relations. I think this is the triumph of hope over reason. And the reality is that March is going to see tremendous oil inventory builds, mostly across the United States, but across the world. So I would not be betting that there's going to be any meaningful production freeze and certainly not any meaningful production cuts.
And even if Russia is successful at brokering a production freeze, lack of demand is still a problem for these oil producers.
The number one thing that has to happen for the market to rebound is that global demand has to go along at a pace of about 1.2 to 1.5 million barrels a day. But when you get weekends, when you get soft news out of China and you get emerging economies struggling, that puts a dent into world demand.
There's news this week that evictions, tenants told to move out by landlords, dropped a dramatic 18% in New York City over the last year. This after the city allocated more money for legal services to help tenants challenge these evictions. Still, there were nearly 22,000 evictions in New York City in 2015. And nationwide, it's argued that evictions have become a disturbing routine feature of life at the margins. Matthew Desmond is a sociologist and co-director of the Justice and Poverty Project at Harvard. He spent the last 8 years researching evictions focused on Milwaukee. His new book is called Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. Professor Desmond, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Tell me about your sense that eviction is a cause, not a condition of poverty. Tell me what that means.
So when I went into the study, I had no idea how big of a role eviction was playing in the lives of low-income families. Eviction causes loss, for example. You lose not only your homes, but your possessions, your neighborhoods. Your kids often have to switch schools. There's really good evidence that eviction actually causes job loss. And then there's the toll eviction has on someone's spirit, their mental health. Mothers who were evicted are depressed 2 years later after the event. And when you add all that up, it's really hard not to conclude that eviction is a cause, not just a condition of poverty, and that we can't fix poverty in this country without fixing housing.
Now, it costs money for a landlord to have to find a new tenant to spruce up the apartment one more time. Are landlords working hard enough to keep the tenants from actually getting evicted?
I think that landlords have a lot of discretion over the evicted decision. And one thing that we learned is that kids, far from shielding families from eviction, actually provoke and increase families' risk of eviction. So in Milwaukee, having a kid triples the odds that you will receive an eviction judgment. And it's because kids are really tough on the landlord's bottom line. Really, the face of the eviction epidemic across America is moms with kids.
What policies start to address this more effectively?
We only offer any kind of housing assistance to 1 in 4 families that qualify. And just think about that for a minute. You know, think of that if we turned away 3 in 4 families that applied for food stamps, if we turned them away hungry. But that's exactly how we treat stable, affordable housing in this country. And so taking the housing voucher program that we already have and expanding it, making it a universal program, so that all families below a certain poverty level can receive that benefit. So instead of paying 60, 70, 80% of their income on rent, they pay 30%. It would cost money, it would take a financial commitment on our part, but there's also ways we can make the program a lot more efficient and cost-effective. This is well within our means to do.
Matthew Desmond is a sociologist and co-director of the Justice and Poverty Project at Harvard. The book is called Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City. Professor Desmond, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
At marketplace.org, you can listen to the director's cut of that conversation, how a kid with asthma or a kid throwing snowballs can lead to eviction, since, as Desmond found out, some landlords don't want cops or ambulances responding to the property because they might spot safety and code violations. like a streaming video series suitable for endless binging. There are two more presidential debates this week before the results of Super Tuesday here are even cold. The elephants are tomorrow night in Detroit. The donkeys are Sunday up the road in Flint, Michigan. For some networks, it's like having a new hit show, as Ashley Milne-Tight reports.
The debates have transfixed millions of viewers, and ad rates have risen fast. Dade Hayes is editor of Broadcasting and Cable magazine. He says networks are charging six figures for a 30-second spot. That's many times what they used to. And they're pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars overall.
To put it in sports terms, this is like an additional round of the playoffs. You know, these debates really, you know, a decade ago did not exist.
All that after-show dissecting fuels viewership, too. David Campanelli is with Horizon Media, an ad planning and buying firm. He says it's not just the debate ads. The broadcasters give those advertisers conditions.
To buy something in a debate, you got to spend this much on CNN in other weeks, too, or other time of the year. So they're kind of double capitalizing on it. So it's been a huge home run for them.
He says the networks are only hoping the rest of the campaign will be as lucrative. I'm Ashley Milne-Tight for Marketplace.
And Sports Authority, the retail chain, is bankrupt this morning, a Chapter 11 reorganization to get out from under more than $1 billion in debt. 140 stores are set to close, not quite a third of them. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.